Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 9th of December. We're delighted to have as our guest again, although this hour will get your blood boiling, Elizabeth Rosenthal from the New York Times. She was last with us talking about the cost of colonoscopies. She's a medical doctor who writes for the New York Times, and she is author of the very important series that has been running all this year, Paying Till It Hurts. It's a series on the high cost of American healthcare. The one on December 2nd is titled, As Hospital Prices Soar, a Stitch Tops $500. And she looks at what hospitals are charging, and the sum is just unbelievable. Your jaw drops as you're reading this article. She, from 2004 until 2013, was the International Environment correspondent for the New York Times and the International Herald Tribune. She's been a correspondent in the Beijing Bureau since the fall of 1997, and she broke a number of very important stories on health in China, including the spread of HIV, the demise of the rural healthcare system, and efforts to market patented U.S. drugs in China. This series that she has been working on all year has covered a number of important issues, and we're delighted to have her with us. We'll welcome phone calls for Elizabeth. The number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also, you can tweet us at K Dunn Show. Elizabeth, thank you very much for being with us again. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, you read your article and you just get so mad, don't you? I mean, you read it and you say, no, 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 something is seriously wrong.
Yes, and if you read the comments, you think it's even worse.
I know. How could it possibly be? You start with these two people, one who gashed her knee at a barbecue, cost $2,229, and another they didn't even use stitches, for heaven's sake. They used that glue stuff, and it was $1,696. It's unbelievable.
Yes, the prices are high, and I would point out, even though these two people both had insurance, they were stuck with big bills, over $1,000 each. So there is nothing, the patients are no longer insulated from these crazy bills.
Yeah, they wound up paying more than they could afford. You said other people in the article, they just didn't have another $800 or $900.
Right.
Nothing more convoluted, you write, than hospital pricing. Hospital charges represent about a third of the $2.7 trillion annual U.S. health care bill, and the charges seem to be willy-nilly.
Yes, I think that's part of the problem. You know, what may be cheap at one hospital is expensive at another. The markup is, 10, 20, 100 times cost. There's just no rhyme or reason to it. So in an era when we're being told, oh, be better consumers of healthcare, I mean, how can you? I mean, one of the gentlemen in the article who cut his finger slicing an avocado, you know, the thing that really outraged him was they said, oh, maybe we should put a little splint on it to support your finger, and then he gets a bill for $529. Hmm. I mean, he knows this is something he can go across the street to the pharmacy and buy for 10. So I think the markup is crazy. You don't know about it in advance. And P.S., in an emergency room, you go in there with a bleeding body part, and you're not going to start off with, well, how much is this going to cost? Because you kind of don't have an option but to get it fixed.
Right. Let's break this down a little bit. You write early in the piece that hospital charges are the single largest driver of medical inflation. Can you expand on that?
Well, yes, there have been a bunch of studies trying to figure out, we look at U.S. medical expenses compared to the rest of the world, and they're 2, 3, 4 times as much. So why is that? What's been going on? And there have been a number of academic studies that tried to look at where we're wasting so much money. Where is that big inflation? And the biggest single place is in the inflation of hospital costs over the last decade. It's been really high. I mean, there are estimates of over 100%. And that's because of basically what consultants in the field call strategic billing. You decide how you're going to bill for something. And it's not like a restaurant where, you know, you get like pasta primavera. It's as if they're taking that dish and saying, okay, this much for each piece of pasta and this much for each vegetable and this much for the oil, and charging whatever they feel they can get away with for each component.
And that's pretty much it, isn't it? You charge pretty much whatever you can get away with.
Yes, unfortunately, because there's really nothing in our system that requires hospitals or providers to do otherwise. I mean, the insurers push back to some extent, but they always have the option, if the prices get too high, of just increasing premiums. And consumers like you and me, I mean, I'm a kind of wonk about these things, so I look at all my bills and I look at the explanation of benefits. But there's really, most people don't, because they're not paying the bulk of them. And even if you do, I look at, you know, my bill for a colonoscopy and say, well, wait a second, why is that $8,000? And I call my employer and they go, well, that's the rate that's negotiated. I call the insurer and they say, well, you know, the hospital, we need that hospital in our network.
Right.
So there's very little you can do, even no matter how outraged you are. And that's why I think we had this real outpouring of comments on this series. I mean, it's been the most commented on series in the history of the New York Times.
Really?
I mean, this one got something like 2,000 comments. And I would urge everyone to look at them, because they tell stories that are horrific. And I think the problem is people are frustrated, they're angry, but they don't have anything they can really do about it other than pay the bill.
Well, what's amazing about it is that you're one of the few people who's looking at this. You read these articles, everybody's complaining about how inflationary health care is, and yet nobody looks at why that's the case and has some kind of government huge study to figure out how to lower these costs, because some of the answers seem, forgive me, a little bit obvious, that you've got to have some kind of control.
Yeah, well, you know, from the outside, the answers are obvious. I guess from within government, we're always dealing with what's politically possible at the moment, and that seems to be not a whole lot, although I have to say outrage among consumers and voters is really growing on this, because it's unsustainable. It's unsustainable
right.
for the country. It's unsustainable for how individual budgets. I can't tell you how many people have written in and said, healthcare costs are now the single greatest expense of my household, more than my mortgage. And that's wrong. You know, there's something wrong there.
Yeah. A day spent as an inpatient at an American hospital, you write, costs on average more than $4,000, five times the charge in many other developed countries.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Why?
Well, it's partly the way we bill. You know, we bill for every part of that hospital stay. We bill for the room. We bill for the IV fluid. We bill for each pill. Whereas most other hospitals, most other countries have inclusive rates. Also, you know, it's partly us. We like our hospitals to be fancy. You know, we have waterfalls. We have valet parking. If you go to hospitals in countries where healthcare is cheaper, they tend to feel a lot more utilitarian. Now, you know, we're never presented with the option of, would you prefer to, you know, not have that waterfall in the lobby and have your health care bill be half as much. I think most people would take that, but they just go into the lobby and go, oh, it's a great hospital. They have free coffee. Well, you know, it's not a good deal for us. And a second part of the problem, which is really problematic, is that studies have never shown there's a correlation between expensive hospitals and good care. So, you know, if you think, as you might for a TV, I'm going to pay more so I get top of the line, that doesn't work with hospital care.
Yeah. Well, so much of it has, and I wonder who was guiding this. We've had a lot of visitors stay with us from Northern Ireland over the years, and one of them was studying to be a doctor. And so we went to a hospital in Milwaukee, and his first thought was, oh, my gosh, this is like a hotel, because everybody had his or her individual room in Northern Ireland, it wouldn't be that way at all. You know, you'd be in a ward of some kind in your health care costs. First of all, it's all free for you, and the cost of the system is so much less. We really are looking for Cadillac care, or are we?
Well, we're looking for Cadillac accommodations, I would say, which is part of the problem. You know, the basic care isn't any different. If you have breast cancer, your treatment is pretty much going to be the same in, you know, in Wisconsin, New York, Paris, Brussels, anywhere in Europe. It's pretty standardized now. But what will feel really different is your surroundings. Now, you know, for me, I would say what I really care about is the care, not the surroundings. And, you know, anyway, we can't afford the surroundings we're paying for now.
Mm-hmm. Well, you certainly don't need the darn waterfall, right?
Yeah, and, you know, you look at, there's an online quiz that goes with the article, which is showing pictures, and it's the name of the quiz is this a hospital or a hotel? And we mixed up a bunch of hospitals and a bunch of hotels, and you have to guess. And I have to say, it's really hard to tell the difference. I guessed a lot of them wrong.
Mm-hmm. Now, you concentrated the Stitches story on the California Pacific Medical Center.
Yes.
Is this just a very fancy center, or are there many other hospitals that are similar to this?
I would say most cities in the U.S. have a California Pacific Medical Center in them, you know, a hospital that is like this. It is one of the more upmarket hospitals. It has a big market share, so it can charge high rates. It's very pleasant. Everyone who wrote in said the care was, not everyone, but most people said, I really liked the care. I just didn't like the bill. So I think California Pacific Medical Center became the focus of this article because in this series we're doing, which has been so magical as a reporter, we looked at our database of people who'd commented and saw where people were complaining about high-priced Stitches, and that hospital popped out at us. The other thing that was really nice about California, and this is kudos to the state of California, they require, unlike other states, they require hospitals to file their charge masters. This is the master price list of every hospital. So in California, you can actually go into a bill and try and figure out why it ends up being so many thousands of dollars. Now, to do that, I mean, the charge masters are there. The CPMC charge master is 400 pages long. A lot of it is medical coding. So it's a lot of work, but you can at least begin to explain how these numbers add up, even though it doesn't make any sense when you get to the final number.
Mm-hmm. Let's look at the salaries of people who work in hospitals, and particularly those who run hospitals. There are 28 officials. Tell me if they cover how many hospitals who are making more than $1 million a year. It's a lot of money to run hospitals or to have a big position in a hospital, isn't it?
Yes, that's that figure is for the Sutter Health Network, which is one of the big hospital chains in Northern California. It's not for profit, so it's tax exempt. Their CEO makes, I believe, close to $5 million.
Whoa.
And what you hear from, you know, it's funny because everyone points at everyone else in this system. The doctors say, and I can understand this with some justification, well, you know, I'm making $500,000, but look, I'm producing something. You know, I'm in there at 2 a.m. doing this surgery. So don't look at me. Look at this guy who's making $1, $2, $3 million and being an administrator. So, you know, it's a system where, and then, of course, the hospital CEOs says, well, you know, yes, I'm making $5 million, but look at the head of Cigna. He's making $40 million. So, you know, it's kind of everyone is feeling a little aggrieved, even though from the outside you think, yeah, this sounds like a lot of money.
And you also write, because of that nonprofit status you just talked about, they can reap tens of hundreds of millions of dollars in tax benefits.
Yes, hospitals, most hospitals in the U.S. are not-for-profit and don't pay state or local taxes. So, you know, we are giving them a big tax benefit, and it is still unclear what we should be expecting from them in return.
Let's go to some of our audience now, and this is somebody who wrote about something that you've written about. Brad on Facebook writes, when people have no insurance or junk insurance, they go to the ER and they rack up huge bills that are never paid back. Then the hospital charges everyone more to cover for those people.
That is true. You know, hospitals do a lot of what they call cost shifting. They'll say, the reason we have to charge $3,000 for Stitches is because we get other people who come in who have no insurance, and we can't charge them anything. Now, the first thing is that the Affordable Care Act, in giving everyone insurance, or at least the possibility of insurance, should take away that logic or that excuse, depending on how you look at it. But I think a lot of people would say that there isn't enough free care being given to justify the size of our bills or the tax exemption. And that debate, I think, we're going to be hearing a lot about in the next few years.
Two more phone calls, actually to the first phone calls. We'll take other messages as well. Elizabeth Rosenthal is our guest this hour. I'm sure that you've been keeping track of her series. We talked to her after the colonoscopy series ran on the front page of the New York Times. It's an important series. She said it's been receiving more feedback than anything else in the history of the Times. Thousands of responses. The latest one is, as hospital prices soar, a stitch tops $500. The series, which is year-long, is paying till it hurts, and it's on the high cost of American health care. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter, at K Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Phone calls now. Judy in Horicon for you, Elizabeth. Hi, Judy.
Hello. I just wanted to mention, I get literature from five different hospitals. Probably about half of my junk mail, maybe even more than half, is from these hospitals. And just recently, I got this beautiful calendar, thick pages, colored pictures, and from this hospital. And I don't even live in the county that the hospital is in. I mean, it's just their bottom, it looks like bottom line. They're just trying to get more and more people so they can get more and more money.
Yeah, I think hospitals in the U.S. are a business. I mean, when you say to people in Europe, when you talk about hospital advertising or pharmaceutical advertising, they're kind of shocked and appalled because it's just not something that hospitals would do. Here, marketing departments are very important to hospitals. You know, they are nonprofit, so by definition, they don't make a profit, but they can certainly make a lot of money. And what they do with that money is, you know, build new things, advertise, print calendars. And, you know, I guess it must be working because they keep doing it. But I think, you know, what I see from our comments is that people like you are fed up with it and don't see this as value and certainly don't want their premiums going towards this kind of activity.
Thank you, Judy. Scott in La Crosse. Hi.
Hi there. Kathleen, this is a kind of a local state of Wisconsin story as opposed to national. But I used to work at the University of Wisconsin Hospital in Madison. And there was a time when all the profits that we made would go back into state coffers and help to balance the budget. And then a previous governor, in this case Tommy Thompson, for reasons of his own, decided to privatize our hospital, and he did. And now all that money that used to come back into the coffer, now he, granted, what he got out of the deal was we were all state employees, and then all of a sudden we stopped being state employees, and we were the board, the hospital board of employees. But all of that money that had previously been coming in to help the state budget suddenly had no place to go. It wasn't coming back in. And where did all that money go? Well, as far as I can tell, a perpetual building boom and administrator salaries.
Elizabeth.
And I think you find in a lot of parts of the country, the only building projects are hospital building projects. And that's distressing. You know, and what you've seen in the healthcare industry is the privatization of a lot of services and what we call the unbundling of a lot of services so that everything is billed separately. Everyone is a contractor, including, you know, if you go to an ER, the doctors in the ER will be contractors. The ambulance will be a private company. So I think that's part of a national trend. But I think cities are going to start to push back against that because it is a lot of loss of income. And, of course, you know, how much new building do you really need?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Scott. Angie, St. Francis. Hi.
Start to, Angie? Push back against that
Angie, you got to turn your radio down. We'll give you a chance to do that, and we'll go to Gary in Eagle River. Hi.
Hi. I've worked in hospital finance for many years, and seen sort of the good, bad, and the ugly. One offhand comment: the first time hospital costs were raised as a national issue was in 1938.
Oh my!
And, in 1938, in the final report, it said something along the line of 1925, the cost of a hospital stay was 55 cents. And in 1932, it had jumped to 67 cents. In 1937, it's all the way up to 93 cents. And the line I just love is it said, apparently, health hospital costs have yet not peaked. So, but the point I wanted to make is on this issue of what hospitals pay for and how they price. It's driven me crazy. I headed a hospital association in Minneapolis and St. Paul for a number of years, and I was on their case, my hospital's case, the whole time on coming up with a more rational way of pricing, what I thought was more rational. We finally wound up actually being the first hospital group in the entire country to publish hospital-specific prices. So you could look at what a garden variety heart attack cost at this hospital and that hospital and the other hospital. It took us years to be able to do that and polish up the the general coding in hospitals is diagnostic-related groups. We had to polish those up for a couple of years before they were satisfactory to our hospitals, that they felt that they were fair. But I guess the main point I wanted to make is just to give you a sense of what's happening. This was 25 years ago or so, and I went through a hospital, one of my member hospitals, the Minneapolis Children's Hospital, and I saw all of these kids, the smiling kids with their hair falling out and the cancer units and the whole thing. It was just heartwarming and gut-wrenching. But we finally, at the end, walked past the neonatal care center and saw this little baby with all the tubes and stuff sticking out. And we stopped, and the hospital administrator said, "Gary, do you know how long this baby's been in the hospital?" And I said, "I have no idea." She said, "Just about a year now." And at a run-up at that point, over a cost of $1 million at 25 years ago. And then we walked down three more of the little bins looking at the kids, the little cribs. So another baby filled with tubes. And the administrator said, "And this is a baby from the same drug addict mother that had the first baby, and this one's going to cost us over $1 million. The cost was so high that they had full-time people working on those several cases just to try to get paid for those from various government and private agencies. So this is what happens when you wind up getting a cut and you get charged $2,000. That makes no sense at all, but they're trying to cover their costs by some way of doing something, and unfortunately, in particular, what happens is the poor sap that comes in that doesn't have insurance, they are really vulnerable.
Elizabeth.
Well, yeah, I think the people who are most vulnerable are the people who don't have insurers to bargain down the prices, the charge prices on their behalf. I think it's another question why the charge prices are so high when most insurers will take about a half of that and Medicare will pay about a quarter of that. So, you know, I said to the hospital, one of the hospital executives in the article, you know, why don't we just rationalize it? Why don't you just try and charge, you know, give us a real price, put out a price list. And you know, he said, which is quoted in the article, well, if someone comes in with a lot of money, you, like a Saudi sheik, you want to be able to charge them, you know, full freight. But I think for us to be better consumers, hospitals need and providers need, we need some kind of price transparency and price clarity. And I know, you know, everyone in the system, the healthcare system will say, oh, but nobody really pays that. So fine, why is it on the bill? Let's just put up prices that are more realistic. And yeah, your insurer may still bargain down somewhat, but at least we're starting from a rational point. And the fact is that somebody does pay it. I hear from a lot of the people who are, you know, good kind of hardworking Americans who say, oh, I have a hospital bill for $3,000. I never thought it was going to be that high, but wow, I pay my bills. And so they set up a payment plan. So some people are paying it, and they're not the people who can afford to be doing that.
Yeah. Thanks, Gary, for the call. Let's get a response to James on Facebook, who writes this. What do you think? Solution: federal price controls on all things medical and prohibit for-profit health care.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think there was a proposal to, for example, expand Medicare for All, which Medicare does have a lot of price controls. That was not politically viable. Most every other country has some kind of price control, national price control. That so far in the U.S. has not been politically acceptable, which, you know, you could note that we accept price regulation for our electricity bills, for we accept price regulation for a lot of things, but in healthcare that has not been acceptable, and a lot of people connect that to the amount of lobbying that goes on and the amount of money that's being made in the healthcare realm at the moment.
You write that hospitals are trying to do fewer services that are not well paid, so there's some outsourcing. You mentioned the kidney dialysis unit. Can you tell us more about which services are well paid and which are being outsourced?
Yeah, this surprised me a little bit because when I worked as a physician 20 years ago, ERs were money-losing propositions. But I guess now with more creative billing, they make money for a lot of hospitals. You always have to worry if you run a trauma center that you're going to lose money on that because trauma patients get brought in by ambulance. They can often not have insurance, and you have to take them no matter. So hospitals that don't want to deal with that risk may not operate trauma services. Kidney dialysis often loses money because that's federally funded, so there is rate regulation of kidney dialysis.
Mm.
Basically, long-term inpatient care often loses money. What makes money is procedural. Cardiology care, where, you know, you're sticking stents in and doing surgery. Radiology makes money. X-rays, you know, especially for inpatients, you've got a captive audience. If your doctor says you have to get an MRI scan, you can't leave the hospital to go find a cheaper one, so they can pretty much charge what they want. Likewise, laboratory tests are big money makers for hospitals. So, you know, there are profits. It's like, I hate to use this analogy because I respect hospitals a lot in many ways and what they do, but it's like a restaurant in the sense of there are certain things you make money on and you try and get people to do more of that. And I've heard even from doctors who said that, you know, the finance people at their hospitals wanted them to order more blood tests because that's where the money is.
Mm. Let's go to Angie now. Try her again in St. Francis. Hi.
Oh, yes. One time, my doctor insisted I go to the emergency room. I wasn't in any pain or anything. And I had to put up with a lot of discomfort, which I was a little crabby there. I know I could have stayed in the wheelchair, but they insisted I get in this bed and pull up the gates around me. I had, like, claustrophobia, you know. It was very stressful for me to just go there, you know.
Yeah.
Anyhow, and so when I got, you get these summaries from Medicare and the secondary insurance, and I saw they had some medication they had given me called sulfate morphine. So I was curious because I wasn't in any physical pain or anything. I was crabby, that's all, because I felt the whole thing was not unnecessary.
Uh-huh.
Anyhow, it could have been so much. They had all these people around. They had done for me could have been done. I could have stayed in the wheelchair and that. So, you know, that was an example of waste.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I take to asking everyone when I have a colleague who comes in with a broken foot. I'm now so much in this mindset of price that I say, okay, how much did this cost? So it would be interesting to know how much you were charged for that morphine. Because morphine is very cheap, and it's marked up a lot by hospitals. And as you said, you know, patients in an ER particularly often aren't given a lot of choice. They're told what needs to be done, and if you say no, you kind of count as, and I worked in an ER, so I have seen both sides of this. You can get, labeled a difficult patient, and if you say you're worried about the price, they'll say, oh, well, then you have to say you've refused medical treatment, which leaves you very vulnerable. So, I think patients are really in the most difficult position in all of this.
Thank you, Angie. Bev, Fort Atkinson, hi.
Hello. I've worked in our local hospital for 30-some years, and I really love our hospital, and we're doing a lot of cost-cutting to save our hospital, to keep it viable in our community. And part of my job as a health unit secretary now is I see the charges. I put charges in as needed. I think we are very good at making sure that we don't waste money in any sense of the term, of an idea of wasting money. But my one question that I would like to ask your guest is, we do need good people working in the hospital. We'd like to have the smartest and the best, and I work with wonderful staff. But we haven't had raises in quite some time. And due to the economy, what about the fact that if they would like all the nurses to have BSNs and if, everyone to be well-educated, including myself, how do we do that and keep hospital costs down? Because you can't, it's 24 hours a day, off shifts, missing your family functions, your children's functions. How do you balance paying people well, including the physicians, and all the rest of the staff that we need, all the way down to housekeeping, and keeping costs down in hospital?
Well, I think that's a really good question, and I've heard a lot also from people like paramedics and nurses and primary care practitioners out in the community who point out very justifiably that they are not well paid, that the average healthcare worker in the United States is not making a lot of money. So the problem really, I don't think, is the salaries of those healthcare workers who are delivering care and in the hospital making sure everything functions. One thing that people point to is the very high administrative costs beyond the hospital, the very complicated way we hospitals bargain with insurers, all the middlemen that are involved. That adds, some people have suggested that adds 10 to 20% to our budget and of just administrative waste that other countries don't have.
Thank you, Bev, very much for your call. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we're talking about health care costs. Elizabeth Rosenthal has been looking at this issue and will continue looking at it. She has one more article in a very important series that has generated so much response from readers. It's been in the New York Times, and there have been a number of I highly recommend that you go back and read all of them because they're very important. There aren't very many people in the country who are looking at this issue the way that it needs to be looked at. She's looking at the high cost of American health care, and the latest article, which ran on December 2nd, is as hospital prices soar, a stitch tops $500. She's a doctor herself. She has been working on this year-long series. She's was also the international environment correspondent for the New York Times and the International Herald Tribune. She was a correspondent in the Beijing Bureau for a number of years and broke landmark stories on health in China. I want to ask her about smog in China. Remind me to do that before this hour is over. Won a lot of prizes for the work that she has done, and her MD is from Harvard Medical School with board certification in internal medicine. Back to phone calls, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, Twitter at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go back to phone calls for Elizabeth Rosenthal and Charles in Ingleside, Illinois. Hi.
Afternoon, Kathleen and guests. I've been thinking seriously about American medical care for some years. and I've concluded that the AMA is the best trade union on the face of the earth.
Well, they do a good job of making sure that, you know, that the prices that are paid to doctors stay high. I mean, these rates with Medicare are negotiated each year. Many doctors will say that they don't get enough, and I think part of the problem is that we, you know, in my humble opinion, we tend to incentivize and pay a lot more for procedures and a lot less for what we call the cognitive sciences, medicine, you know, the cognitive medicine. So your general practitioner isn't really getting paid very well, and increasingly people say that the AMA doesn't represent those general doctors. It represents specialists. But I do have to say also, in defense of some of the doctors, some of the most encouraging letters I've gotten in response to the series have been from some of the physicians' organizations. As our the previous caller was saying about a hospital trying to do good work, there are a lot of doctors out there trying to do the right thing, and they are as frustrated by the spending and salaries and their patients who can't get what they need as anyone else.
Yeah. Thank you, Charles, for your call. Jim in Louisville. Hi.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have worked in three different healthcare systems, and the compensation in many ways, in my opinion, is like sales. We were always given quotas to meet on an annual basis, and if you met those quotas, you got a percentage of that. Either some systems were what you actually billed, but they didn't receive it at that point. Others, it had to be actually be in the accounts receivable, but it was very much like being on commission, and many, many systems are still that way. I believe Kaiser Permanente in California is totally salary-based, but in Wisconsin, I know of several in Wisconsin that are still compensation based on your productivity. I believe Dean Care is one in the Madison area, and I think the name escapes me, up in the Green Bay area. So I've written letters to our congressmen and our senators and to President Obama, and I said nobody's talking about that issue, that that the compensation for our providers is kind of, you know, backwards. And I'll take my
thank you. Thanks, Jim.
Here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I think that there are, you know, there are very few organizations like Kaiser in the U.S. where doctors are all on salary, and that's a very important distinction. Most of American medicine still works on the fee-for-service model, meaning the more you do, the more money you make, the more tests you order, the more money you make, and the problem is, you know, and that's the way, you're right, that's the way a lot of businesses work, but I think the question we have to be asking ourselves is that the way we want our healthcare to work, and I think the answer is, you know, we get more healthcare, but we don't get better health, and that's what the studies have concluded.
Elizabeth, it's hard for me to understand how we could have been through this laborious, difficult debate on healthcare to have some kind of a change to the healthcare system, to have everybody talk about how horrible the expenses are, and to not deal with it when we are overhauling healthcare. I just don't understand. I don't understand it. I don't know how what you write about can still be taking place when we've looked at every nook and cranny, at least we thought we did, of healthcare.
Yeah, well, I think there are two ways to think about that. One is that, you know, politics is the art of what's possible, not what the art of what's of the ideal. So I think we got the kind of healthcare reform that was politically possible at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, in many ways, Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, assuming all these computer glitches will be worked out, does set up a platform where we can deal with this as a crucial next step, in that people will not be able to be excluded because they have pre-existing conditions from insurance. Everyone will have the opportunity to get some kind of insurance. So now the obvious next thing we have to do is to say, okay, how are we going to control these prices? So, you know, we've kind of set the stage, and a lot of the loopholes where people could say, oh, we can't deal with prices because we have all these uninsured people that we're not getting paid for, well, now you're going to get paid for them. So let's deal with the price issue.
Yeah. Email, at what point did the cost skyrocket?
Well, they've been... They've been going up and up and up for 20, 25 years. There's, you know, I think it's been a gradual progression, which a lot of people will say tapered off a little bit in the mid-90s. I don't know if people remember when there was a big burst of HMO activity,
right,
which tried to control care costs. That kind of fell off. And between, say, 1995 and 2005, 2006, they really zoomed up. 7-8% a year. Now they're increasing less, 3-4% a year. There's a lot of debate in the world of healthcare economics is about whether that's because of the recession, which means people are spending less. Is that because people are having to spend more out of pocket or not getting care they need? Or is it because we're really starting to think about the value of healthcare and there's some pushback from consumers about getting better value? But even so, you know, 4% a year growth is still too much.
Mm-hmm. We go to Carol in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I have a question. We keep hearing time and time again that the cost of health care is going sky high because of lawsuits. And doctors are being sued, so they want to take all of these unnecessary tests just to cover that they don't get sued for not giving you a particular test. And hospitals and everybody, you know, this is the excuse I've heard time and time again, and I just wondered what your guests thought of that.
Yeah, you know, I've talked to a lot of healthcare experts who studied this, and they feel that, yes, malpractice is a problem, but no, it doesn't even begin to explain the size of our costs. It may for some specialties, like the OBGYNs have very, very high malpractice insurance, but they are not very well paid doctors generally. So, you know, go figure that. They're the ones paying the really high insurance premiums. The other thing you hear as a kind of explanation, which has some justification, but again, it doesn't explain the extreme cost heights we have, is that medical school here is really expensive. Yes, that's true. You know, most other countries, it's free or heavily subsidized. But, you know, most doctors make and that may incentivize people to go to the higher paying fields. I know, you know, I went through the whole thing of medical school and the slog of an internal medicine residency. It's really hard work, and you feel like you deserve stuff at the end. But in the end, you know, the amount of compensation cannot be explained by that degree, the training, because, you know, let's face it, people in a lot of professions work really hard to get where they are, and, you know, the doctors are really no different in that respect.
Right. Thank you, Carol. Maureen in Milwaukee, hello.
Hello.
Hi, Maureen.
Hi.
Go right ahead.
Hi, this is Maureen.
Yeah.
Am I online?
Yes, you are.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This is Maureen. I'm calling on a number of issues. Most importantly, I'm commenting on the insurance coverage. Really, one of the pickles that we're in the middle class is that we may be covered by insurance, but the deductibles are just outrageous. And they've now structured things so that there's an in-network deductible, but then you need to also, you know, meet the out-of-network deductible. Well, you cover it. Well, ultimately, you're really paying out-of-pocket. For a middle-class family, we have four children who are grown and out, but my husband and I are now trying to, you know, move towards retirement. It's just a no-win game. So that was one. The other is that for preventive care, we just received a bill for $1,000 for a colonoscopy. I know you were talking about that earlier. I didn't hear the whole story, but that's after insurance. So I just find that to be there's something terribly wrong, and it's just making everything just very difficult now.
Yes, I agree. You know, this is the deductibles are getting very high, both for people who have the Affordable Care Act plans, which are start with high deductibles, and for those of us who have traditional insurance, deductibles go up every year, co-payments go up every year, co-insurance goes up every year, and there are a million loopholes. This inpatient deductible, outpatient deductible, in network, out of network, with preventive care, which we were told, it's going to be free, but that's one of the boons of the Affordable Care Act. You should get your preventive care for free to encourage everyone to do that. Well, what patients are finding is that you go for this preventive care and, they may maybe take a little biopsy. Well, then that's not preventive care anymore. That's treatment. So then you have to pay for that. So the bills are just coming left and right at people. And, it really isn't sustainable. But this is what we get because we are trying to make a fee-for-service and private healthcare market work. And it's maybe working a little bit better, but not for everyone, and it's not done yet.
So the Affordable Care Act, how has it made things better, if it has in any substantial way? Has it?
Oh, well, I think there are certain things that it does that are just the right thing to do and better if you look at the whole country, but may have produced bad effects for some individuals. People who didn't get insurance through their companies or weren't eligible for Medicare or Medicaid previously had available to them what we call the private market insurance. And many of those policies, I think it was 60%, didn't cover maternity care, didn't cover having a baby. That's no longer legal under the Affordable Care Act. Mm-hmm. People can't be excluded for pre-existing conditions. I mean, I have heard from people in the past year who were excluded from insurance because they had a pap smear that was abnormal, or because they were on an asthma inhaler. This system was not, it wasn't covering people. People were uncoverable. Mm-hmm. So I think it's dealt with that, and that's great for those people. On the other hand, it has led to higher deductible policies. Some people are facing higher premiums. And, in the end, that's just going to get worse unless we deal with the pricing and cost issue.
Right. Wayne in Pewaukee. Hi.
Hi. I want to give an example of how hospitals try to gouge people. My mother was 92 years old, and she is very frail and in the hospital. And when I talked to them, they wanted to do an MRI on her. And I asked, for what purpose? And they said, well, to see what's happening. And I just told them, I says, I'll tell you what's happening. She's dying. It's just completely unnecessary. It would have gouged Medicare and her supplemental insurance.
Yeah, I think that's a big issue. End-of-life care is something that we haven't dealt with very well. The incentive for hospitals is to push to do more, not for the individual nurses and doctors always, but our system is encourages people to do things when sometimes in medicine the right answer is to wait. And let's see, well, what are we going to do if we see something? If the answer is nothing, then traditionally doctors would say, don't do it then. But I don't think that's the logic in hospital finance anymore.
Yeah. Thank you, Wayne. One more call quickly. Jill in Rhinelander, hi.
Hi. Good afternoon. What I'm calling is, there's a flat rate book out there. You know how much it's going to cost to have your car fixed. This procedure costs so much, it takes such a amount of time, etc. Why isn't there a flat rate book for procedures?
Well, that's a good question, Elizabeth.
Yeah, it's certainly a good question. And there are a number of privately run or some government-subsidized health care sites, which you can plug in your zip code and the procedure you want, and it will tell you what different places have charged other patients in your area. There's one called Healthcare Blue Book that has a lot. It's a really good consumer resource. But, it's funny because in order to get this information, we're relying kind of on back roads rather than just being able to go to the hospitals and say, okay, what do you charge? I mean, the most ridiculous example of this was my patient who I profiled in the series on the the article on pregnancy, who went to her local hospital. She was insured, but her insurance didn't cover pregnancy, and said, how much is this going to cost? And they said, between $4,000 and $45,000. I mean, how can you budget? You know, she was trying to be responsible as a new parent. How can you budget?
How can you? So thank you so much for being with us. I guess we don't have time for the smog story in China, but that's horrendous, isn't it?
Yes, it is bad.
It is bad. Do you have family still there, Elizabeth?
No.
You're all back now.
We're all back here. And, you know, our lungs so far are fine.
Good. Well, thank you for this series. You're just doing, you must know, such important work. And thank God for it. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you so much. Yeah. I hope everyone keeps talking about this.
Yeah, I hope so, too. Elizabeth Rosenthal, our guest, Pain Till It Hurts is the name of the series. She has one more to go in the series, and the last one is on emergency room care stitches that cost thousands, which you can find in December 2nd. And it's on our website, too, on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing the show, Robin Cherry for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee downtown, and thanks for all of your calls. Great conversations to follow